Hello and welcome to Astrology Studio for Gemini, Gemini Rising and Moon for 2022 into 2023. My name's Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next hour or so. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a Planet Waves customer. And here we are in this time in history and in our lives where it is not so easy to remain stable, to make decisions, to plan, to have stable relationships, given all the many variables and controversies of life that we are encountering. And I want to start there and stay there for a moment, because I think that to treat our lives as if we're in some normal time in history is not going to be productive, although it's important that we live our lives like not anticipating various disruptions and calamities. At the same time, we're prepared for things to change, and at the same time, we do need to live in the present, looking toward the future. And yet, you know, what do you do when the future seems, at least to most people, as uncertain as it's ever been, in terms of just the basics, you know, being available and being present, things that we counted on, economic factors that we counted on, community factors. And it seems like the field of existence is shifting and changing so rapidly that it's impossible to get our feet down for very long. It is fortunate in this sense that Gemini is really the most mutable of the mutable signs. Pisces is right up there in terms of being able to adapt to almost any conditions. Although Gemini is very strong in this regard, and you know, your ruling planet is retrograde 3 times a year. Often in dramatically different configurations. And so you are used to changing directions, pivoting, adapting, and seeing things from at least 2 points of view due to the number of stations, direct and retrograde, that happen in a year. This is constantly leading you to reevaluate your position and kind of catch up with yourself very frequently. I'm recording right before a new moon, right before Mercury stationing direct. So it'll be interesting to see what thoughts and ideas come out apropos of Gemini after the Mercury direct. If I have afterthoughts after June 3rd, I will add them and send out an email. The coming 4 seasons have some very unusual transits happening, by which I mean on a long scale of time. In the case of Pluto changing signs and entering your fellow air sign Aquarius, that's something that hasn't happened since shortly after the American Revolution. I'm not sure the timing of the French Revolution, but certainly after the American Revolution, which took place with Pluto in very late Capricorn. And so it's been hundreds of years, and no one knew about Pluto the last time it was in Aquarius. So we're about to experience Pluto in Aquarius consciously for the first time. Because this is an air sign, it's particularly significant for you. The air signs will all resonate together. And that begins before your next birthday. Also, before your next birthday, in 2023, Saturn will change signs from Aquarius, where it is now, into Pisces. And when it enters Pisces, it enters another kind of a sign that has a powerful influence on Gemini, which is a mutable sign. So the signs resonate two different ways. They resonate by quadruplicity, which is all the mutable signs will resonate together. And then by triplicity, all of the air signs, in your case, will resonate together. So there's big changes on both of those, by both of those metrics. And so this is representative of the large scene shifting. The Saturn and Pluto transits, once you've been watching them for a while, have a way of shifting much of the ground that we stand on, so much so that it's difficult to notice because everyone is experiencing a version of the same thing. So I want to come to those a little bit later in this reading, but let's keep in mind, as we look at some of the long-standing placements, some of the immediate placements that are happening, and a few other topics, that everything is leading to these major transitions. And so I feel like my role is to help you tune in to what those are about for you and the facets of your life that will be the most influenced. And along the way, you know, help you work out whatever might be lingering around and have a good time. So speaking of that, the mini era that we are in now involves Jupiter in Aries. So by mini era, I mean that Jupiter is a big planet and we all feel and notice the transits, whether we give them a name or not. But Jupiter is a vitally important planet for you because it represents your relationships, with Gemini as the first sign that we look at, the one that signifies you, that places Sagittarius on the opposite house, seventh house. And so therefore, your relationships and your overall environment are signified by Jupiter. And another thing signified by Jupiter is your professional life and your reputation, because Pisces is on your 10th house, and the 10th is the one about career and reputation and what you're known for. And I think also the 10th represents what you aspire to, on a good day, what you aspire to do. And then for people who perhaps are less oriented on actually getting things done, what you want to be known for. Both of those indicate a spiritual orientation. The two signs that really bring in the spiritual themes in the zodiac are Sagittarius and Pisces. Now, everything can be viewed as a spiritual matter, of course. Taurus and Scorpio can be, the inevitable exchanges that we have with people and all that. There's a vast spiritual dimension to that. But what we think of as spiritual, our sense of our place in the cosmos, our most cherished beliefs, the things that we have faith in, the places where we seek to expand our consciousness in some way, and seek to bring in the more subtle levels of thought. And then in the case of Pisces, the need to be of service. Both of these are prominent in your chart because they're what are called angular houses. They're on the mutable cross, and one of them speaks more to your relationships and the way that you perceive the world, and another one speaks to your your aspirational goals, the things you strive to do, and how you see yourself at your best. And Jupiter rules those, both of those houses and signs, and for you. And what's interesting about Jupiter is that it goes through a sign in about a year. Now, lately, Jupiter has been splitting its time between alternating signs. So for a long stretch, it was fairly consistently moving from sign to sign, which means that the retrograde would happen in the sign where Jupiter was spending the majority of its time. Now Jupiter is retrograding. For example, it's recently entered Aries. It'll retrograde back into Pisces. It'll retrograde. It'll go direct and go back into Aries, and then next year go into Taurus. And so while we may think that a planet spending a year in a sign is a while, when we talk about relationships and professional activities, it's really not that long. It's a little bit mercurial on these things that we want to last for years, or things that we make an effort to build up over many years, relationships and careers being really two of those things that are, you know, worth long-term investment. And it is interesting that Mercury does this retrograde three times a year, which is constantly reminding you of the changing nature of reality, keeping you on your toes, and compelling you to reevaluate things all the time. But Jupiter, which goes retrograde once a year, given the subject matter that it covers, is very similar. There's a constant change of tone, vibration, and color that happens in your relationships. And 1 year is often very different from the next year. And I would say that it may even be challenging to have foresight that lasts more than a year or a year and a half, that you can't really see that far ahead. And it's probably not the best idea to plan that far ahead for you to be in the moment as much as you can, the moment being think in terms of year-to-year movement of your life. And with Jupiter now spending most of the next year in Aries, this is drawing you out into the public more. It is, you know, you are inherently a social being. Yours is the first human sign, right? The zodiac starts with a ram and continues with a bull or a cow, depending on how you think of it. And then when we first see a person in the zodiac, we see two of them in the sign of the twins. So there's a joke in there, which is saying that humans are inherently social, and Gemini is the first sign that illustrates that need for human contact that you have. And now Jupiter, which guides these important facets of your life, is taking you out into the open and holding you out in the public, among friends, for example, in social situations. We would seem to be having the first year in a while since 2019 where it's possible that we will have some form of, put some quotes around this, normal socialization, if for no other reason than people getting sick of all of these disruptions that don't seem to serve any purpose or have any meaning other than to be disruptive. And so this is good timing in terms of, you know, you being described as getting out and then there being opportunities for getting out and benefit from socializing with people. The 11th house represents, I think of it as representing small groups. It represents groups that are identifiable, not massive parties where you don't know people and where the environmental conditions are such that it's not possible to communicate. The 11th house is more like dinner parties. It's more like cocktail parties. It's social gatherings where it's possible to speak to everyone in the room at least once. You might not do that, but, you know, for example, that's how cocktail parties are designed. I have a friend who is something of a master of etiquette, and he was once telling me about the rule where you're supposed to circulate rapidly at cocktail parties to, you know, spend 5 minutes with each person and move on so that there's a lively movement in the room. This describes one of the best ways for you to handle your socialization now. Keep moving and find your way to the place that you want to be. And where goes Jupiter, there goes genuine benefit and the possibility to create relationships that will serve you. And these are both personal and professional, because Jupiter represents both your personal and your professional relationships. They're both described by the 7th house, but then when we get, that's the house of marriage and partnership, and when we get to the 10th, the house of career and reputation and aspiration, Jupiter is also playing a very important role there. And so you get this by getting out of the house. And so that the 11th is almost always out of the house unless you are a socialite and you have, you know, your own multi-purpose room. You get out of the house to experience the 11th and to experience these groups of people that are more defined. Again, not like the crowd at a baseball game, but more like your friends in your section of the stadium or the people hanging out at the dinner table with you. Now, Mars is there as well. And Mars also is drawing you out. And there's, you know, as I speak, a Mars-Jupiter conjunction is forming. And this is saying, you know, go for it. And saying that, I realize we live in a time when anyone may be experiencing social anxiety of a certain kind and may be experiencing a sense of loss from all that has happened the past 2 years. We've all lost friends the past 2 years. We've all lost friends who we thought were lifelong friends, whom we thought we had so much in common with. And so it is fortunate that you have Aries in the 11th, because that gives you a tendency to want new experiences and new people. And Jupiter there is saying, all right, well, it's time for that. Now, also in your 11th house is Chiron. Chiron's been there since 2018. This is an interesting placement, because Chiron doesn't always manifest in a way that's convenient or that seems friendly. And it is true that the past 4 years that Chiron has been in Aries, that began in early 2018. And so that's been going on. That's been going on for 4 years. There have been challenges all throughout social existence. If you think back to the tensions of 2017 and 2018, right before Chiron entered Aries, it just has not been easy to be social, and yet it is essential that you do so, just to keep your vital force energy moving and to keep a flow of new people and new energy into your life. And that is going to translate to new opportunities for relationships and new opportunities for the work that you do. And this further translates to financial opportunities, because the 11th house is a very important house in terms of the rewards of the business life that you have, of your professional life, and the rewards of your of the reputation that you have built. Now, while this is going on, there is, I think, a vitally important message in that Mercury is pretty much right now standing still and about to station retrograde in a few days in your 12th house. And so there's a second message in true Gemini form describing something of the exact opposite of being out and being social, which is a need for solitude. There are things that can only be learned or understood or experienced about ourselves in a condition of solitude. And that's a very special form of being alone. It is the nutrient of being alone. It is the oxygen of being alone. It is the necessary experience of having a deep relationship with yourself. And I would strongly encourage this. Now, it is, I think, a very positive thing that Mercury, your ruling planet, is stationing direct in Taurus right now. One thing I've seen over the years and in looking at the charts of people who, you know, do something with their lives that they are happy about, that they you know, they feel they have gained something and offered something, is that Gemini benefits from the presence of Taurus. And the reason for this is that Gemini is, you know, it's at right at the top two most mutable signs, constantly changing direction, constantly changing viewpoint. But Taurus has the opposite quality of stability. And so to the extent that things with a strong Gemini signature are able to accomplish things, that is often the result of a strong showing in Taurus. And that is very much the situation for you right now. First of all, the ruler of Taurus is there. That's Venus. And then there's an important asteroid called Pallas. There's a trans-Neptunian object, the very first planet ever discovered beyond Pluto, called Albion, is also in Taurus right now. And then there's this kind of wave-making machine that is there as well, Uranus, pretty much right at the middle of or slightly past its the midpoint of its journey. And so you have, and then Mercury stationing direct. And so for as mutable as Gemini is, it needs these anchor points in Taurus to be able to maintain a steady enough tempo and to remain grounded enough, and all the different ways that one can be grounded to get anything done. And Mercury joining this group of planets at the time of your solar return is saying, okay, this is really the place where you are going to draw a lot of strength. So there's this dual message between spend as much time, meaningful time, alone with yourself as you can, and as much meaningful social time with others as you can. And then you can do what you can do to cut out all the versions of that that don't really help, that are not necessarily helpful or meaningful. Okay. Back in a moment. To do these readings, I use a thing called the solar chart. And what the solar chart is the zodiac with all the signs in the same order, but oriented on the sign for which I'm doing the reading. It's the same basic method that I use to write horoscopes or do the annual readings. And the beauty of the solar chart is that it breaks out the reason, the reasoning process behind the attributes that the signs have. So, for example, we all know how socially oriented Gemini is, but the question is why? And when we look at the solar chart and we see Aries on the 11th house, the 11th also being a very social concept, and we see Aries there. Well, one thing about where you find Aries anywhere in a chart or a solar chart is that it is a place where people do their self-actualization work. It can also manifest as avoiding self-actualization by being tribal and constantly going along with the crowd. However, I'm assuming that we are on the high road here and that we're not trying to avoid important matters. And in the case of Aries in the 11th, not trying to avoid the necessity for social experience as a primary state of being, and also a place where you are called to take leadership. Now, I think, you know, it's deeper than thinking. I've been observing this very sad situation in the world as it's unfolded the past couple of years. And it's my observation that the most serious injuries that people have faced are social injuries, whether it is the fear of other people, the fear of going outside the house for any number of reasons. And for some people, it's not wanting to catch a disease. And for other people, it's not wanting to be too close to all these people who are worried about catching a disease. Then there have been massive injuries of trust inflicted, communities divided, people excommunicated, judgments made, a few words spoken that have resulted in people being banned from their social media platforms, which are a very important form of socialization today, whatever one may think of the digital environment or something like Facebook, to have had a social existence for 10 or 15 years and then suddenly to be thrown out of that because you said one thing or to be attacked for having said one thing. All of this describes social wounding to trust. And this is kind of standing on this very shaky ground of all of this division that we are experiencing. And though it has been bad at different times in history, I don't think it's ever been as bad as it is now in terms of people feeling excluded, excommunicated, unable to speak their personal truth, still not welcome among their families. You would think people have gotten over this by now, but people have a hard time apologizing and admitting that they either overreacted or were completely out of line in the judgments that they had made. And then how, you know, do you necessarily want to be friends with someone who has treated you that way, who has banished you from the holiday table for no reason or whatever it might be? And so someone has to have the job of helping rebuild the world. Someone, many people, have to be in the role of healers of the social environment. And I can think of no better sign for this job than Gemini. And it's especially perfect now because a constellation of different forces are lining up in your 11th house, where you are naturally a leader anyway, and where it is often your role to set the example of being yourself, regardless of what anybody thinks, because you don't really have much of a choice. It's just the thing that you're going to do. But with your relationships and your professional life guided into this house by way of Jupiter, and with Mars amplifying that in very powerful ways. I mean, Mars, you know, Mars can get us into trouble. Mars can motivate us in a diversity of ways. But it's when you put Mars into combination with other factors that you really get an interesting effect. And so to have Mars in conjunction with Jupiter is saying that you are in a position to be bold and to take up this matter of social healing and the healing of trust. And it's perfect, given all of that, that Chiron is there as well. Chiron amplifies this calling. It is placing you in the role of a kind of a social shaman where you are able to live between different worlds, walk between the worlds. But I think with Chiron in Aries in your 11th, the kind of spiritual and moral imperative is that you set the example of always being yourself wherever it is that you happen to be. Part of why the social environment is so fragile and subject to the kinds of devastating changes that it has been through, particularly in the past 2 years, is because people, not everyone, but a large majority of people spend a lot of their energy on trying to convince others that they are someone other than they are, or attempting to conform or to fit in. And so you are blessed with a diminished ability to do this, which means that you set the teaching example of being real more than most people can do so, because especially in groups, there's no benefit, there's no purpose of attempting to cloak yourself in some way, because it's just much easier to be real. And this is going to be the basis on which we heal the fragile and injured trust that has been further injured over the past couple of years. And Chiron places you in the role of healer in the social realm. So this is a very significant thing to honor and to follow, that it's not merely for your benefit that you're being drawn further out of your reality, though your healing is integral to the healing of your community and to the healing of the people that you encounter and who are close enough to you to use you as a kind of a personal example. But to reframe what I was describing in the previous segment about the role of Taurus in your life, the sign right before yours, often the most important other sign in the solar chart is the sign right before yours. All of this Taurus is saying that the way to be true to your mission as a kind of a social healer, social healer, is to keep a very strong inner orientation, to be aligned with yourself, and no matter how extroverted you may be, to remember that your primary orientation is very likely to be an introvert. And I don't think of these things as being about behaviors. Now, a true introvert might say, oh, you don't know how it is. You know, you don't know how it is to not ever want to talk to anyone or whatever it might be. But I think that maybe these are different definitions of introvert and extrovert, but I think of it as being about where your, let's say, sense of your spiritual reality is oriented. And whether this has been true in previous times or not, I suggest you kind of stay pinned to that inner sense of being that you can only get through constantly cultivating self-awareness and a kind of an inner understanding of yourself and of learning how to trust yourself in a very deep way. Now, Gemini is an air sign, and air signs do tend a lot of noise around here, do tend to have a strong mental orientation. But what Taurus is saying, and the thing about this kind of map that makes it comprehensible, is that Taurus orients us on the physical plane of reality. It orients us on our homes. It orients us on our senses and tactile experiences and feelings. And so that is part of the inner orientation, which is to say, stay very close to your sensory reality, not merely your ideas about your reality, but the direct observations that your senses are giving you and the information coming directly from your physical body, how you feel, what food nourishes you, where you feel good. Let's see, the specific adjustments to your environment that you can make that help keep you in a positive frame. It is likely that you are as much of a homebody as anyone, because your home has to be a sanctuary for you, and then there has to be something about that home that is treated with sanctity. There has to be a place that's really your studio in your home, your place where you can be with. Whether it's a meditation room or a work room or your own bedroom or a creative space that allows you to be alone with your thoughts. And I will keep reminding you of that through the year in various horoscopes. Okay, so now let's talk about the financial angle of your chart. Now, one thing about the financial angle of Gemini is that it's strongly oriented on family. There are really two houses that relate to finances as apart from what you earn through the work that you do. Now, that's the 11th house. And we talked a lot about the 11th house, and that's one of the reasons for you to continue your mastery of the 11th. The social house, the house that's about, you know, small groups and dinner parties and that kind of thing, and the place where I'm saying you will take leadership, that also happens to be the place where you acquire money and resources through your work. The second of the 10th is the 11th. But except for that, the two financial houses, house 2 and house 8, are very strongly oriented on your family. And that's because Cancer and Capricorn are the two signs most closely associated with the nature of the family as a kind of an ancestral institution, and particularly on parents. Now, the more exciting at the moment of these two houses is the eighth. And it is somewhat complicated. because Pluto has been there for, let's see now, going back to early 2008, where there were instantaneous changes in the entire financial structure of the planet starting in early 2008. Pretty much the moment Pluto entered Capricorn, we entered this kind of global recession, subprime mortgage crisis. A lot of people were shaken out of their employment situations. But you have Capricorn oriented not only on your blood family, but also on family related to in-laws, related to people who come into your life through marriage and then also through various forms of financial business partnership. And this is continuing to be a very, very active house in your life all through the year and into 2023, even as Pluto leaves Capricorn and makes its first foray into Aquarius. There's going to be a lot going on here. And a lot of that redoubles the message of the ancestral connections and the connections to family. And so one thing that I would suggest is to really study, first of all, the financial patterns in your family going back several generations, and then to be listening carefully for ancestral messages. Things like what I would have done differently with my life if I could have, coming from maybe a grandparent or a great-grandparent. There is a message as well about understanding the conditions that are placed on money that enters your life through some form of legacy, inheritance, or marital bond, and to be conscious of how you think of that money, should you have any of it, or how you think of wealth generally, because it's going to have that flavor to it. There's going to be a lot of influence of the ancestors. And one of the things about Pluto and Capricorn over these past, I guess around now going on 14 years, is that there is often power associated with matters related to finance. And what I think would be very beneficial as kind of a growth project would be to analyze where concepts of power meet concepts of money for you, and understand that relationship. It can be a very complicated relationship, and there can be things like a lot of guilt involved and methods that people have of controlling others through controlling any form of ancestral money, whether that's inheritance or trust funds or money exchanged or, you know, granted through marriage. One of the messages of your chart right now is that you have to have your own money. You have to have your own bank accounts. You have to have your own control over them. And this implies a level of privacy. I won't say secrecy, but a level of privacy. Excuse me. About your finances. But more to the point, your own ability to earn the money that you need to do the things that you want. That does not come from someone else. I mean, all money does, but there's two ways money can come from someone else. Either you earned it, or it is through some legal framework, right? Some structured framework, marriage, will, trust of some kind. That's the eighth. And there is just so much energy in this house. And this will increase over the course of the year, particularly as Mercury makes a very, very long visit to this house at the end of the year, because there's going to be a Mercury retrograde entirely in Capricorn. And so that is saying that your ruling planet is going to be in the eighth, your eighth house, your solar eighth house, for months I haven't done the exact calculation. I mean, I could do it, but it's probably going to be the last 3 months of the year into or like the last 2 months of the year, well into January. And so there's something there about investigating all of this and really figuring out what the rules are and sorting out what belongs to you versus what belongs to someone else. And at the very least, mapping out the boundaries that exist and then the boundaries that you want to exist. So there's quite a bit about the revelation of the secrets of these matters with Mercury doing this long retrograde at the end of the year in Capricorn and finding information that you didn't know that you were missing, and just, you know, getting an understanding of the nature of relationships that are predominantly financial. Now, the other angle of the eighth is where financial relationships overlap with sexual relationships. And here we get into marriage, generally speaking. And so this is going to be an area that is, you know, demanding extra scrutiny, in part due to the activity at the end of the year, in part due to the closure of the Pluto and Capricorn journey, which does not end all at once in March of 2023, but that first ingress into Aquarius is very important, and a lot is going to come out in the first couple of months of 2023 in terms of the real nature of the transaction, the real nature of the power relationship when you actually do the analysis and you you figure out who holds the power and why. And I would strongly suggest making this a kind of an ongoing vocation starting now so that you have a good head start on this. So this is suggesting that you invest yourself in gaining a real understanding of these contracts that you have that exist through marriage, the in-laws or any people who are financially connected to marriage partners or marriage type partners, and then anything coming in through inheritance, trust, or legacy. Really understand what this is about. Really understand the nature of these transactions. It's not necessarily easy, and there are not a lot of people left who can guide you on the spiritual nature of these matters. Like, what is really being transacted? Where do you keep hold of yourself, and where do you do this weird thing called sell out? The message is, know the territory before you have to know the territory. Find out what's going on behind the scenes and find out the facts of the lives of anyone that you consider to be an intimate partner. And I'm not saying you do this with an approach of suspicion in any way, but rather from a viewpoint of seeking understanding in the matters of others so far as those matters directly implicate and influence and affect your life and people that you are responsible for. And so part of this message is either become very good at understanding contracts of all kinds or have someone in your life who is very good at contracts. There are those people who can just go right to the problem in any contract, who go right to the exit clause in any contract. And to make all new contracts with a level of impeccability, and to control the language to the greatest extent that you can, and further, to never put your signature on something where you're not sure that you can fulfill the terms of the agreement, or where there's not some way to get out of the agreement. What Carolyn Mace calls sacred contracts, I think extend into all agreements and all contracts in our lives. We need to know what promises we are expected to fulfill, and we need to hold people to the promises that they've made to us, or make a conscious choice of letting them out of those promises. Now, this whole topic that I'm describing, this whole topic of legacy and joint finances, this includes taxes, are all matters of the eighth, and it would probably be very interesting to do a kind of before and after study. We're not quite after Pluto and Capricorn, but we're almost after it. So we're far enough toward the end of that where it's possible to look back and figure out what you've been through and all that has changed, starting in 2007. What was your life like in 2007? What was the nature of all of these things, and where do you stand today, both with yourself and with others? Now, one clue about this is there was a massive peak of activity in this house in 2011 and 2012, so there were likely to be turning points there. And one thing that should be consistent is that there is often this interplay between what comes to you through some means that you have not directly earned, for example, a legacy or inheritance of some kind, as opposed to what you actually do with yourself, your time, your energy, and your talent, and the results, particularly financial results, you get from that. Now, ultimately, they're all your resources. However, I think there needs to be an understanding of this contrast and what it means and why it exists. By far, the way of the future is moving toward your own independence. And this will be a very important year toward guiding you and guiding yourself in that direction. Through the year 2020, there were massive changes to the world, and most of these changes were concentrated in the first 3 months. And you would have to imagine that if astrology means anything, that there were extremely heavy-duty aspects that took place in that time for there to be such a powerful effect, and there were. And where these influence your chart is in very sensitive places, particularly the eighth, which I've been talking about in much of the second segment, the one where you have, let's say, the ties that bind, familial ties that bind, in marital and contractual. And then a little bit later in the year, through the year, and then in grand style at the end of the year, the emphasis shifts to a house we have not talked about yet, and that is the ninth house, which is the, let's say, the seat of your spiritual life and your orientation in the universe. What you believe about your origins, your spiritual and religious values, your concept of who and what God is. And so these changes that had the ability basically to pick society up and spin it on its finger, the aspects that did that, were also influencing you. And now all of these same planets that were involved, and those planets were, we've talked about Jupiter, but mainly Saturn and Pluto, are going to be making big moves in the beginning of next year. And what the thing is with these big moves is that the effects are taking hold before the transits officially begin. Before you can say, well, that's supposed to start on March 20th, 2023, whatever day it is. Well, we're feeling it now, and we're going through the changes now. So I want to go through what those are, because they are fairly rare. Saturn only changes signs every 2.5 to 3 years or so. And so that is involved. And then Pluto only changes signs. Well, it's getting slower and slower. For much of our lives, it's been about 14 years that Pluto has been in a sign. And then as it's moved further, going through Capricorn and then into Aquarius, it's going to be more like 20 years in a sign. So these are rare changes, and they represent sometimes the entire scenario of existence shifting. Now, the thing is, you have been experiencing these planets in direct ways, though you may not have noticed the power of the transits on a personal level, because it was so easy to confuse what was going on with you personally with what was going on in the world, in that the influences and impacts on your life may have seemed to be coming from society and not from your personal astrology, but it was both. And the fact that it was both means that you were influenced in some very deep ways that you are still working out. Now, what is nice is that we're moving past all of this and into new and somewhat mysterious and potentially daunting territory. And I'd like to map that out a little bit for you. So one thing that happened in early 20 was a conjunction of Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn. And fairly soon, and that just shook the world. When you look at the concentration of events all associated with this thing that we've been through, they pile up around the 12th of January, 2020. Far-reaching, far-flung events in many different countries concentrate around an astrological event that took place in this extremely sensitive area in your chart where you work out your agreements and your sacred contracts. Then Saturn, fairly soon after that, moved on and entered Aquarius, where the challenge for you was one of regaining your faith. Now, the nice thing about having Saturn moving through the ninth house, which for you is also a fixed sign, is that this may have been a fairly easy thing to do for you, because Saturn is going to grant stability. Saturn in Aquarius grants a real power to those who are willing to align with it and understand, for example, the necessity to think as an individual in the face of tremendous pressure to be thinking as a group, a theme that runs many places throughout your current charts right now. So with Aquarius on the ninth house, one of the qualities of that is, first of all, it is a humanist view of religion rather than a religious view of religion. You don't want anybody telling you God said this and God said that. I think that even all the way back to childhood, you understood that that all of that is what we decide is true. And then on another level, there's a genuinely humanistic quality about you where all of this super deep stuff that's often attributed to God or to the kinds of things that scientists claim are true about the universe, which resemble more and more religion, you know that it's about the human race. You know that it's about the human family. And so Saturn entering Aquarius, and it's been pretty much there ever since, in what that would be like the spring of 2020, have guided you to understand that we hold the solutions. But there was another thing going on as Saturn went back and forth through Aquarius, which is this false collectivism that emerged, that we had to do everything for everyone else, and to think about yourself or your children in any way was to be deemed a selfish and therefore dangerous person. There were a thousand forms that this took. In hindsight now, we can see how ridiculous so many of them were, the expectations that were put on us, the judgments that were put on us. And so one of the things that you've had to slug out with Saturn and Aquarius in your ninth house is making sure that your concepts of reality, your values, and the things that you accept as true, which is another way to say believe, are really your own. That is a crucial spiritual lesson for any lifetime. And with Saturn going through your ninth house, it has been vitally important that you distinguish your concept of what is real from other people's concept of what is real, and to never allow yourself to be told what is true for you without you having decided that for yourself. And I will say that culture and government were taking a lot of liberties in attempting to force people to believe things that they knew were not true, or to conform to things that they knew were not right for them. And so the lessons you have learned in this time are very important to consolidate. And Saturn is a good teacher. Saturn works with a combination of discipline and rewards, and in particular, Saturn Aquarius rewards you for living under the power of your own intelligence. So this is an important part of your spiritual life, is that you know that much of your spiritual grounding is about your intelligence. And this is no artifice. Most of what's called religion is based on bypassing intelligence. And therefore, as Jung said, religion is a substitute for religious experience. And bypassing intelligence based on being conned or forced or coerced or persuaded or told you're going to get excommunicated is a cheap substitute for making up your own mind, and it can be very dangerous. Now, the reason why it's so important that you really get the lessons that you've learned in this time is that Pluto is going to be entering Aquarius, and this is going to be, I believe, more influential than Saturn. It lasts longer, more than 20 years, and it is likely to serve as a powerful, socially coercive force. And so under the influence of Pluto in Aquarius, which I think may stretch all the way out to something like 2043, for many people listening, Pluto's going to be in Aquarius once it gets there for the rest of your life. It's only for relatively younger people, you know, live to see into the Pluto in Pisces age. Well, it would be interesting to speculate what that might be about. But we are entering this time now where, for example, the pressure is going to go up to conform, and where much of that conformity is going to involve the digital realm. And we're in, I think, firmly in transhumanist times, where there are enough influences and people who are willing to go along with them, or people being conned into this thing where we think that computers are as good as us, artificial intelligence is as good as natural intelligence. Sure, why not go to a rock concert made up by a completely ersatz band with the music made up entirely by algorithm, and the appearance of the musicians is completely contrived, and the whole thing is broadcast in front of you in holographic three-dimensional reality. And that's the friendly side of all of this. It's when your body is made to merge with the technological realm that I think should be more daunting to people than it is. And the thing about this is that this takes place in your ninth house. And so your experience is largely going to be mediated based on what you believe and, more significantly, what you think is right. And there is going to be a lot of pressure put on. And we have seen that there is no shame in blatantly lying to people and convincing them that things about themselves that are absolutely not true must be incontrovertible truth. And if you don't accept that, there's something wrong with you and you're antisocial and all this crap. And so you may need to be far more assertive about your prerogative of what you choose to accept as true, because there's going to be so much pressure, social pressure and technological pressure, to accept things that are not true, that it's going to take tremendous strength to stand up to it. Now, Pluto can go one of two ways in your ninth house. It can signify your fully embracing your spiritual path as your evolutionary path, and you must do what is right for you, and Pluto will grant you the power, should you choose to accept it, to stand alone against very large forces. And so what we've been through in the past 2 years would seem to be a kind of a dressed rehearsal for what is coming in the next 20 years. And what has happened in the past 2 years has not all been bad. The good part has been that a lot of very highly intelligent and spiritually evolved people are getting together and working out the for example, the details of what is true and false in the science. And also, I think one of the most reassuring things is a union among people that is forming based on very deeply held and kept spiritual principles. People from very diverse parts of the world working together on things that matter to the whole world. So if we scale that, you know, just imagine. I think it's crucial that you have your values, that you know where you stand. Where do you stand on having a computer implant? Where do you stand on having programmable nanoplasma injected into your body? These are all things that are going to become real. How far are you willing to go to meet the health requirements of some island or government that says you must do all of these things to get in? At what point do you say, I'm not going because I'm not doing that? I don't care who else is going or what they promised me for going. I decided a long time ago that I'm not doing that to myself or to my children. And if we have to sit here in a treehouse, then we will sit here in a treehouse and that's it. So you will need to become very strong in your principles. Not inflexible, but really understanding the reason for having principles in the first place. And that is because you need underlying values to guide your life, and you need your direct relationship to spirit or to the cosmic intelligence or to the oversoul of humanity so that you cannot be persuaded on those grounds, on the ground that the typical trip of religion, this is what I say God wants you to do, therefore you're going to do it. Now, this is just substitute the word God with any number of entities, Bill Gates or someone like that. That's what that's about. And so I will say that whatever you may have thought of the options that you were presented with the past 2 years at various times, and whether or not you actually did what you believed was the right thing to do. I know a lot of people who've said, well, I didn't think it was the right thing to do. I didn't think it was necessary, but I did it anyway. Okay, so how far can that go? How far can you be pushed or pulled or stretched or muscled into doing things that go against your values? I would say that it's crucial to know where your line is and not cross that line. Okay, so you want to go to Peru. Well, who fucking cares? If that would require you to make a compromise that you know in your heart and soul is wrong for you, then you don't do that thing. This is not easy for humans. Most humans are not at the evolutionary stage where that's real. They have to make a lot of mistakes over a lot of lifetimes. So I would say, you know, be where you are in terms of your evolutionary growth. This Pluto in Aquarius thing is going to be a real trip, and it's going to provide opportunities to just cash in and give up and sell out, and it's going to provide some incredible opportunities to advance the total state of humanity, to really get us through this crisis point in our technological adolescence, and what is spiritually far worse than an adolescence. Spiritually, we almost seem to be like 2-year-olds, either throwing tantrums or subjected to the tantrums of people who do nothing but try to convince us how much power they hold over us. All right, enough on that. Next thing, 10th house. Saturn moves on too. Saturn, right around the same time that Pluto enters Aquarius for the first time, Saturn leaves Aquarius and enters Pisces, where it stays into something like 2026. Let's see. Let's just get that while I've brought that up. Let's see when Saturn enters. Is that Aries already? Oh my God. Saturn enters Aries for the first time in 2025. So there's obviously going to be a retrograde back into Pisces, which is true. And then Saturn finally re-enters Aries to stay in what is an absolutely stunning chart on Feb 13, 2026. This chart gets printed. Okay, so what is Saturn in Pisces about? That's basically 23 through 23, 24, and 25. This is about solidifying your professional orientation. This happens very soon. So get with it now. The fact of having Pisces on the 10th is not, well, it's not that easy because Pisces is not that tangible, but the requirement that it places is that you must have a creative career of some kind. You either must approach the work that you do creatively, or you must have a career that is genuinely oriented on a creative life, on art, on expressing the depth of your soul as part of your daily life. Not that easy, but there are people for whom doing anything else is completely impossible, and they're going to do it no matter what. And I suggest you become one of them. Now, Saturn is going to favor making this work for you in terms of business and profession. And so that is a real plus. You have had Neptune in Pisces for many years. I think that goes back to something like 2011 or so. And so this is a big change to add Saturn to Pisces, where Neptune has been all of this time, because it is going to bestow tangibility, whereas Neptune can, in addition to bestowing all kinds of fog and intangibility, create a deficit. And so Saturn shows up, and you you have something to crystallize and grab hold of. Now, that's not happening for another 10 months. What is fortunate is that very recently, I don't quite know what day it is, but as far as I'm concerned, in the chart of your solar return, because it happened in your solar return season, and will be there for this new moon coming up on the 30th, is Vesta. The very Saturnian asteroid Vesta has entered your 10th house. And so what Vesta is saying is to hold space for that which you must do. And know the thing that you'd be willing to give up everything for. That is one manifestation of Vesta. It doesn't mean you're going to give up everything for that thing, but it means know what that would be if you ever had to face that choice. To know your bottom line, to know your true boundaries around your sense of mission. I would say that with Vesta taking up residence in your 10th house for a while, Vesta will enter. You get a good, juicy spell of this. Vesta will leave Pisces and enter Aries. It's really going to be in Pisces for a year? Almost. Vesta enters Aries on Feb 8, 2023. So you get a long opportunity to have Vesta, basically be your kind of servant. And the way that Vesta serves as a servant is to help you define the space around you, to create the space you need for the goals that you have. And the symbol, the fundamental symbol of Vesta is a fire burning. Whatever else you want to say about Vesta and its influence and relationships, I've had a lot to say about that. Vesta is a flame burning, and the flame burning is the inherent creative flame in every person, which can be expressed many ways. And then the other thing that Vesta does is provides a container or a vessel for that flame. And so there's two things happening. There is burning, there's the tending of the flame, a few things, and then there's also the defining the space using that chevron, that vestal vessel, as the central organizing principle of space, of time, and of activity. And this is a nice long transit of Vesta through Pisces, and will serve you well if you summon that particular version of the goddess. And to do that, you give daily attention to what you love. You make sure that flame is tended and burning at all times, even if you have to get up 6 times a day to do it. And you make sure that you create you understand what the central defining principle of your life work is about. And with Vesta, everything comes second to that. All right, that is my message for you here in your birthday season. I've gone on a little bit longer than planned. I'm happy to entertain your questions. Drop them to me with a clear subject header like Gemini question, EFC@planetwaves.net. And because I know that Mercury is about to station direct in a few days, and then a whole new raft of information may come out, I add a follow-up recording, I'll send out an email saying that I did so. Thank you for your business and your trust and sticking with me and with Planet Waves through these needlessly controversial times. I haven't changed much. I live the commitment that I've pretty much always lived, and I'm happy to do so and to make that available to others. So, again, thank you. Okay, till next time. Bye for now.